Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSEO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future. Why do we
never get an answer? Greetings. Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. This hour, we're expecting Sally Armstrong, international journalist, war correspondent, and women's right, shall I say, advocate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
She's an activist and an advocate and a reporter of some very disturbing yet hopeful stories.
Women's Lib 3.0, as I said before.
That's an understatement.
Understatement, but we are going to the future with women's rights, and we got to know what that is.
Yeah.
Right? Beyond equality.
Yeah. It's way beyond getting the vote. It's way beyond getting equal pay. Her book is really about very oppressed women in countries where they literally cannot count on the protection of the police to prevent them from being raped, where they don't have the right to speak up about who they marry, where they're sold into slavery. So there's a movement underfoot, thanks to the UN human rights organizations, that have gotten governments around the world to pass laws by treaty that say that the governments constitutionally will protect women's rights or protect the rights of all their citizens equally. And this book is about how that constitutional law is giving women new conversations about what their rights are in countries where traditionally they have not had them.
Yes, Sally Armstrong has checked in. That's great. That's great. We're being a war correspondent out there in the field. You never know when things might delay you. But I'm so glad she's here now. And
hey, Dr. Future, I'm glad to be here.
I'm so glad you're here, too. And, you know, we have a common alma mater. I went to McGill also.
You did?
I did, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yes, 74-75, so a little bit later than you, but still was...
Just a little bit later. Good school.
Yeah. Big part of my social imprint, if you will. So
Mine
for
too,
yeah, good, good. And you know, it is interesting that the student union at McGill was named after Captain Kirk from Star Trek.
Oh, for heaven's sakes!
Yeah, the William that Shatner Building. Yeah, that's the student union.
Yeah.
Where the McGill.
I remember it well.
Yeah. So, welcome to the show. We usually look at where the future is of things in the world because we're so close to Silicon Valley. We're very involved with the tech industry there. And Santa Cruz, more the social consciousness of the Bay Area. So, we're very interested in how you, as a war correspondent, you go and get the perspective of women in war situations as opposed to the men. Now, can you tell us a little bit more about how you do this?
Well, you know, I am a journalist. I work in zones of conflict, but my
yes.
beat for 25 years has been to find out what happens to women and girls, because when I started this, nobody was paying attention to the women and girls, mm-hmm. and yet they were such a huge part of what was going on. If a village was being attacked, if people were running away, the women have to look after the kids. The kids have to be fed. There are issues that had to be dealt with other than rocket-propelled grenades. I was fascinated to know how they were managing, what they were doing, and what they contributed, actually, to either the growth or the decimation of the village. So I started out that way, and it grew, and I just kept following it. And the good news is, Alan, all these years later, everybody's doing that. It used to be the women were on page 28 of the paper. Now they're on the front page. So it was a good job and still is.
I could not put your book, Uprising, down. I found it to be so compassionate in relating some very, very difficult stories and yet so hopeful. I just would like for us to share a little bit with the audience about the history that you covered in that book and where we're at today, looking forward.
You know what? And that's why I wrote the book. It's because the earth is shifting under the status of women and girls. For all those petitions we signed and all those marches we went into and all those demands we made to change constitutions, and women elsewhere have been doing the same thing. All of a sudden, and it's pretty sudden, things are starting to shift. And when I saw that, I wanted to record it because I was the one recording all the bad news up until then. And the shift is happening, and it's happening for a lot of reasons. You know, Facebook would be the biggest one, because all of a sudden women in the north, the south, the east, the west are talking to each other, and people find out, you know, other people don't live that way, the way we live. How come we live this way in whatever country it is? And they're learning more about the presumptions they had about each other. You know, people who are in fundamentalist states are continually told that North American women are all whores wearing jeans and lying around and not doing the job. They're finding out that's not true at all. And as we expose these myths and women start to talk to each other, it's creating tremendous change. And as much as a government or the UN or whoever else might have failed the women as they seek to stop the oppression, the women are now doing it themselves. And that's the big difference today.
Interesting. Well, can I ask you how you resolve the seeming conflict between local customs and women's issues?
Well, you know, that's a very interesting topic, the business of local customs and women's issues. We sometimes approach those as though they're none of our business. We sometimes think of, certainly all the years the Taliban were in power and I was covering Afghanistan, I was the Taliban's worst nightmare. They kept saying to me, you're not from here, you're not in our culture, you're not in our religion, you have no business writing about our women. Well, what they were doing to the women of Afghanistan was not cultural, it was criminal. And now everybody knows that.
So women's issues transcend culture. So women's issues are actually, it's like paper, scissors, stone. I mean, women's issues are bigger than the cultural mores.
I wouldn't say that.
No?
You know, it's very popular to put up the culture as a defense shield against change.
Yeah, sure.
People say, well, what are you trying to do, westernize us? Or what are you trying to do, stop what we've done all our lives?
Yeah.
I think that's a little bit of a defense shield. I think it's a whole big of an excuse. And I think it's time we called it for what it is, which is an opportunity to keep the status quo and to stop change. I don't think anyone's the least bit interested in changing somebody's culture. I think they are interested in having people, girls go to school, for example, so they can learn to think for themselves and not be told by somebody else what they have to think. And I think that's what's going on in the world today. And you know, the economists claim it's making a huge change in the economy of the village. I mean, even the American economist Jeffrey Sachs says the status of women in the economy are directly related. Where one's flourishing, so is the other. Where one's in the ditch, so is the other. Well, you and I have known that to be true for a very long time. But when Jeffrey Sachs says it, it gets traction all over the world.
Yeah, it suddenly becomes real.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. The technology has evolved to connect the world more than ever over the last decade, especially. Now, has the rise of the internet contributed to women's lib issues around the planet, in your estimation?
Well, that's what I was just trying to explain to you. When I was writing the book, I was doing research to find out why the earth has started to shift under the status of women and why it started so quickly.
Yeah.
And I looked at all kinds of things, like the women's movement. It started out as a Western women's movement, but then, excuse me, we're joined by Asian women, joined by African women. And I wondered if that's what did it, but it wasn't. It was Facebook. And when Facebook hooked the women of the world together, they started asking the most important questions.
Ah, interesting.
Why do you live the way you do? Why do we live the way we do? What's good for us? What's good for you? And the dialogue was, I dare say, the worst day in the lives of fundamentalists and extremists and misogynists was the day the women started to talk.
Yeah, so the direct communication, that's really what did it then. One-to-one, right on.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah. I mean, even young people in Afghanistan, for example, there's a group called Young Women for Change. And they said to me, 67% of the population of this country is under the age of 30. We never started a war. We never fought a war. We hate these old customs. We want change. And here's the kicker. They said, we have the tools to make change. We're all on Facebook. And this is so valuable to these kids.
Yeah, so change is made locally, but locally connected to the global mind of the species.
Look how fast it goes today. You make a change. And I read something the other day that said if Facebook was a country, it would be the second largest country in the world between China and India. It also said that our knowledge doubles something like every few years.
Increasing, too. There's supposed to be a point called the singularity, where we basically have all knowledge available to us all the time.
Yeah.
And that's not that far away. So things are changing very quickly. And so what do you think is going to happen? Do you think we need to transcend seeing ourselves as separate and maybe as a species? Do you think that would help?
No, I don't. I think the direction it's going in right now is the most valuable direction. You know, it all comes down to education. You get the kids to school, teach them to read and write so they can think for themselves. And they will make the best decisions for themselves.
So self-awareness, everyone's self-actualizing to their capabilities.
Uh-huh.
So now, Sally, in your book, you said some things such as that Afghanistan is the number one worst place for women in the world now. Is that still true today?
Well, actually, I said it was Congo. Congo is known as a country where it's more dangerous to be a woman than a soldier. But about Afghanistan, I'm happy to tell you, I'm just back a few months ago from assignment in Afghanistan, and what we don't talk about are the changes that have been made. They're not at the finish line, for sure, for that matter, neither are we. But we look on Afghanistan, I think a lot of us, as a failure, and it's not fair to judge it that way. Let me give you some statistics as of that are only about 2 months old. There are 9 million children back in school. That's pretty astonishing. The life expectancy in Afghanistan has gone from 42 years to 62 years. Well, your tax dollars have been at work and others. And maternal and infant mortality has dropped 70%. The GDP is up fivefold. And when they had the presidential election, 75% of the people turned out to vote.
We got a minute before the break, by the way.
Numbers, aren't they?
Well, that's great. So we actually, it has improved things for us to be there. We should feel good about that.
Well, there's a long way to go, but I think
in the right direction.
Calling it a failure, we should concentrate on some of those numbers.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's great information. Thank you.
And so is that making Afghanistan more stable now?
Well, you know what? That's a hard call because stability is still an issue in Afghanistan. And now that most of the international community has left, they have to struggle to make their own forces, their military and their police forces work. And you know that they're in a learning curve. So there's still problems with security. There's still problems with corruption. As I said, they're not near the finish line yet.
All right. Listen, Sally, thanks. Stay for the break, and we'll be back in about 3 minutes. Dr. Future Show.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to international journalist Sally Armstrong. We have a question coming in on text. What's the biggest women's issue that is concerning to you these days?
Boy, that's a tough one, you know, because there's so many issues. But I would say, if you want to take on an issue, take on one that says, now is the hour for change. Now is the hour we can make change. Women are reaching a tipping point. Get on board. Remember that movie, If You Build It, They Will Come? Mm-hmm. I think there's an attitude there that could very well be used. Because if you promote this, if it works, it's good for everybody. It's good for the economy. As I said, it cuts poverty, it cuts conflict. And that research is done. You know, the answers are in on that one. So I would say the biggest issue is moving forward and saying, now is the hour.
Moving forward, now is the hour. Great, great. We have a caller, Mrs. Future?
Yeah, we do. Let's say hello.
Now is the hour time. Who are we talking to?
This is TK from Freedom. Hi, TK. Do you have a question for Sally Armstrong?
Well, actually, I was wondering, domestically speaking, I certainly feel, yes, I am a guy.
Okay, just checking.
Gender, even though that's a gender-neutral word now, guy doesn't necessarily mean dude, but I am a dude.
Okay, all right. That's interesting.
Question. Okay. Domestically speaking, what do you see? I believe women, more and more women are going into the business world, getting advanced degrees in medicine, business, and things like that. And I just wanted to know, what does she see as being the area of the economy that is going to be more dominated by women in the future? And if she concurs with that, it's more going to be the business sector and the scientific sector.
Thanks, TK.
Well,
good
question. Professions are already dominated. There's more females in medical school. There's more females in law school. But you're right. The business side is the one that's really coming up now. And all of the studies that have been done claim that if you get more women on corporate boards, the bottom line for the corporation improves. I mean, you can't argue with stuff like that. But there aren't very many women on corporate boards. It's less than 30%. And that's where you need to make change if you think you're going to improve, well, the performance of the business. And I think that's where we're going to see more. I know in Canada they've started a new, I think they call it the 30% Club. And they're trying to push the fact that corporate boards should be at least 30% women. And you know what? Just in case you're suggesting or thinking that I think women are better than men or East is better than West or one religion's over another, I don't think that at all. And none of my research points to that. What it points to is that together we do a way better job. And together, we take on some of the most intractable files in the world, such as poverty and conflict. And that's what my research has shown to me. It's not that one is better than the other. In a war, for example, a guy will think, gender-neutral guy, as you just said, but a man will think that victory comes when the other person lays down arms and admits defeat. A woman doesn't see it that way. She sees it as, finally, you're going to get your landmines out of my field. I can put a crop in and I can get some food to feed the kids. And furthermore, the school will reopen and my kids can go back to school. It doesn't mean one is right and the other is wrong. It means that together you have a way better peace program than if only one is driving this bus.
Thanks, TK. We have another caller. Hello to Colonel Perry. Hello, Colonel
Terry. Colonel Terry.
Colonel Terry. Welcome. Welcome back, Colonel. Do you have a question
for Sally? Mr. Armstrong, by the way, Mrs. Future is one of the smartest, most capable women on the planet. Maybe you observe that yourself. So are you.
Yeah.
And I've looked at your work, and I want to compliment it highly. I encourage all of my nieces to take engineering and to feel totally self-confident, but not be afraid to be women, you know, feminine in a balanced way, but to require that their value, self-worth, and themselves be respected by both themselves and all the men they encounter. In that regard,
I agree with you, Colonel. I agree with you. And if we looked on everything, never mind where you live, what country you live, your income, if we looked on each other with respect, no matter what, we would solve an enormous number of problems. So I agree with you.
Very true. The great tragedy, I think, is the macho, and I will say the Catholic Church attitude, which I've observed a lot being a former Catholic, and also more tragically, the Islamic attitudes towards women, which are contained, to be candid, in the preposterousness that is in the Quran and the writings of subsequent scribes and mullahs.
Have you read the Quran?
I'm sorry?
Have you read the Quran?
I've read English portions, not well in Arabic.
The Bible?
Not the entire book.
There's not one single holy book that is good to women. You read all of them, and it's because of when they were written. Now, the difference in books like the Torah and the Bible is we interpret them differently today. And the Quran has been interpreted because it's a 24/7 religion. It's not a go-to-church-on-Sunday religion. It's a lifestyle. And it hasn't been reinterpreted. And some people think it needs to be. But we have to be careful about who we're accusing here.
Yeah, you know, Sally, I think this is a perfect opportunity to introduce some of the ideas from your book, Uprising, that really were amazing to me, one of which is how the girls, I think, in Swahili were going to court to sue the government for their right not to be raped. And the way that that case was built over many years was to be discerning about which laws did come from the Quran, which laws came from the government and the Constitution, which laws came from tribal leaders or customary interpretation, and then to get a conversation among the people about which laws they felt were being truly represented. And when you look at the Quran and you see that, you know, the prophet says that polygamy is acceptable in four circumstances, but none of them are the ones that are being enforced for forced marriage, say, then there's a conversation that didn't happen before, right?
That's right. That's right. And that's the conversation we need to have today. And that's precisely the conversation, especially the young people are having in these countries. They're saying, where is it written in the holy book that I can't go to school? Well, guess what? It's not. Where is it written that my mother can't go to work? Well, that's not written there either. And, of course, you know what young people are like. They start up with, well, what else have you told me that isn't true?
That's right.
Exactly what you called it, the conversation that needs to begin. And it has begun. Now, let me repeat again, we're not at the finish line. I mean, we've got a long way to go, but we're not at the finish line in this country either. So this is a conversation going on with young people, and they don't like these old customs that are being passed off as religious edicts. that are hurtful to people. They're prepared to take those on, and good for them, because that's the only way to make change, is let the people involved make the change.
Yeah. You know, another part of your book that I found very inspiring was the way that the issue of the female mutilation of genitals was being handled, and that in the research, it turns out that the women who were actually conducting this kind of traditional sacred rite for women didn't, like the men and the other villagers, didn't know what was going on until it happened to them. And
yeah, that's right.
So the secrecy of these customs that are abusive to women and that are painful and that probably was started by some controlling guy who didn't want his daughter or his wife to be having sex without pain or something, you know? He wanted to control it.
You know what, though? You know what? We're not that different here. There's always been a taboo on talking about sexual assault. And now the taboo has been broken, and now people are talking, and we know if you can't talk about it, you can't change it. But look at the incidence of wife assault in America and in Canada. It's huge. It's disgraceful. But you don't see people coming to work and saying, my husband beat me up last night. We're secretive. We don't tell, because somehow, we think it's our fault, or we feel ashamed. And it's time, as one of the chapters in my book says, the shame isn't ours, it's yours. And it is time to turn that shame over to the perpetrator. But you know for sure, what are the numbers? I mean, it's 4 in 10 or something. So you know very well, you're working with those people, you're living with those people who are getting beaten up. But we don't talk about that. Well, we didn't, but now we are.
Mm. I'm curious, if I may ask, you're no doubt familiar and acquainted with Hersey Ali and her AHA Foundation.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And great book she wrote, both of them.
Well, enlighten our audience.
I'll let Miss Armstrong do that.
Okay.
Well, she's a Somali woman, and she wrote first about female genital mutilation. By the way, they call it female FGM there. Where I did my work was in Senegal, where they call it female genital cutting or excision, because they speak French there. Mm-hmm. So just to, in case anyone's listening and feels we haven't made the proper interpretation. So Ali wrote about that and what happened to her as a girl and why she ran away from this. And I think, if I may be so interpretive, I think the value of her book, the very great value of her book, was the honesty she brought to the subject. She said what people never dared to say before. And she opened doors for many others to say, me too. And that's how you make change. So I have great admiration for her.
Okay. Example, I'd ask you to comment on that. Here she is. She's left Somalia. She's gone to Europe. She's gotten a European education. And she's declared that Muslim, Islamic women and women worldwide, as you do, deserve to have recognized freedom consistent with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and simple human compassion and balance. Now, my question to you is, can't we confront the Islamic men with the fundamentals of their sociopathy and their own insecurity? They needn't fear women, if you will, by respecting them in balance. And I'm curious of your answer.
Well, first of all, it's not all Islamic men. It's only some. And secondly, if you're going to say that we need to confront Muslim men for their treatment of women, then must we not also confront Christian men for their treatment of women?
Absolutely.
Women in this country who belong to the Christian faith are being beaten up, sexually assaulted, raped. Do we not need to confront them as well? I think we're very quick to put blame on areas we're not familiar with. We feel a little out of sorts because we don't know it well enough. I think we need to understand that a collection of fundamentalists and extremists and misogynists have hijacked a religion for political opportunism.
Mm-hmm.
And to condemn all is not the way we do business, is it? We've never done business that way.
But all right, folks, we have to take another break.
And accuse them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Okay. This is such a great conversation.
I got some other questions for you, too, when we come back after a break.
Yes, hang on, and we'll be right back with more of the Dr. Future Show and our guest, Sally Armstrong. Thanks. Welcome back to the Dr. Future show with our guest, Sally Armstrong. And Sally, before we go to another caller, I just wanted to take a moment to respond. I so agree with what you were just talking about before the break, about how we can be quick to blame institutions for attitudes or behaviors that really maybe need a little bit more personal responsibility. Rather than throwing the baby out with the bathwater, we really need to realize that all women need to be protected, whatever culture there is. And just in honor of the fact that the Pope is in the headlines landing in the United States today for the first time, I think there's a really interesting note that I like. I actually like this Pope and am kind of inspired by the way he is taking the Catholics of the world and turning them towards greater compassion. And I just want to read something which is from his grandmother, who he credits with teaching him that compassion is more important than the rules that the religion observes. This note says, "May my grandchildren, to whom I have given my whole heart, have a long and happy life. But if pain, sickness, or loss of a loved one should fill them with sadness, may they remember that one breath taken at the tabernacle where the greatest and august martyr is present, and one glance at Mary at the foot of the cross, will act like a balm that is able to heal the deepest and most painful wounds." Now, the only reason I bring that up, which obviously it's very Catholic, is because he credits this woman as teaching him to be in his heart when he analyzes how to enforce the laws. I think that that's what the best in religion can do for people. I think there's a lot in your book that reveals how misogyny has allowed men to misinterpret church law for their own benefit, but there are a lot of good men who are trying to use the goodness in religion to create goodness in the world. So I think we have too little discussion, and a lot of people lose sight of that.
Yeah.
And we have another caller as well, so let's...
Before you get the call, I wanted to say I have a little piece of information that came in today of a new music video from Lady Gaga that it seems like she'd be a strong ally for you, from what I can see. She released a harrowing new music video about a college campus rape crisis, showing women being sexually assaulted and how it happens on college campuses today. And it brings that whole conversation out for women in North America to talk about, that sexual violence happens. Yeah, what's that?
You bring up the most important topic of all for today's conversation. There is an incredible new documentary that's come out in America. It's called The Hunting Ground, and it's prepared by Kirby Dick. It takes on this issue of rape on the campus brilliantly, absolutely brilliantly. And what its conclusions are, we are led to believe it's all the football players and all the frat boys who are doing this. What he shows unequivocally is that it is 10%, and they reoffend and reoffend and reoffend. You know why? Because they have impunity, because the universities do not want any story about rape to smudge their reputation. So the universities have been very guilty of not dealing with the crisis that is on their campuses. And this documentary, I recommend it to everybody, The Hunting Ground. It really opens our eyes and tells us what we need to know.
Okay, great. Thanks for that endorsement. I will take a look at that. Let's say hello to our caller who's been patiently waiting. Hello, Craig from Santa Cruz. Welcome to the Dr. Future Show. Do you have a question for our guest, Sally Armstrong?
Yeah, actually it's Chris.
Oh, hi, Chris.
That's okay. My question to her is the same question I would pose to anybody who is trying to overcome any injustice or whatever you want to call it when it comes to a particular group, whether it be sexism, monogamism, whatever, racism, anything. Don't you think that the day of healing would start if you would stop making it a battle about women and more a battle about people? Because regardless of what we are, we should all be considered one group. And if you come at it as the injustice towards women, you are still separating the two. Because is it the removal of the problem that you're after,
or the tipping of balance of who is in control.
Sally?
All right, let's give Sally a chance to answer.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Okay, you know what? I think you're raising an issue that we all need to talk about. And frankly, we did that. We did that. We tried to address the issue of the oppression of women and the terrible violence against women, certainly here as well as there. And we tried to do it in terms of people, men and women, girls and boys, families. And you know what, Chris? It didn't work. And for my work as a journalist in zones of conflict, I've always concentrated on the women and girls. And invariably, when I give a speech, at the end of the speech, they say, well, what about the boys? You want to get the girls to school. What about the boys? And my answer is this. Yes, the boys should go to school. Yes, the boys should be involved in the discussion. And I'm putting my energy behind the women and girls to get them up there. Someone else is going to have to worry about the boys.
Yeah. How can you control high testosterone-fueled behavior?
Well, I think it's about time the men sat down and had a chat with each other about that.
Do you know?
Is that my fault? Absolutely.
Is that my responsibility?
Well, maybe there should be a comparable estrogen meeting.
Well, I think that you get together for your testosterone meeting and I'll attend, believe me.
Oh, you'll attend. I don't know. That could be dangerous.
It could be.
Yeah,
that goes back to that old adage about boys will be boys. And I think it's time we stop thinking that way.
Well, it does get into irrationality, right? I mean, emotions do take us out of our behavior, normal behavior. Especially when you're a teenage and you're full of testosterone and vinegar, and it's crazy time, you know. I mean, has any culture really been successful with that so far in your experience?
Well, I think we are successful. We don't apply our own laws. Ah. We have laws in North America that guard against that kind of behavior.
Yeah.
But then we say, oh, well, you know, boys will be boys. Well, enough of that. Behave yourself.
Yes. Well, the idea that the boys can take care of the boys and the girls can take care of the girls is fine as long as it's not the perpetrators of boys harming girls, right? Because then...
Well, you know what? Let me share a story with you. Mm-hmm. I was giving a speech at a school board, a big, big school board on the West Coast. And afterwards, I was meeting with the teachers. And they said to me, you know, we got a really big problem in our school. And I said, what is it? They said... There is a club, it's called the Little Girls Club, and that club is grade 12 boys, and they have a contest every weekend how many grade 7 girls you can have sex with. Mm. I almost fell off my chair. I wanted to know, who are these horrible boys, and who is letting them get away with this, and where are they learning this behavior? But on the other hand, I want to know, what happened to the girls that they're going along with this? Where's their self-esteem and their self-confidence? I know about hormones. I was a teenager too. But this is appalling. This is absolutely appalling. What's left of a kid who gets, it's like putting notches in your belt like you're a gunslinger.
Yeah, exactly. And really, I think I am a very healthy sexist in that I feel that women's concerns and agendas are very different than men. And they do have very different values that need to be honored.
And yet they're the same species.
They're the same species.
I'm not convinced that men's values are different to women's values.
Now, there is a collaborative intelligence.
I'm not convinced of that.
I mean, there is a collaborative intelligence ultimately where male and female energies play both a significant role in how we create society, don't you think? Well, that's probably pretty much what we're supposed to have.
You know what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
You look in your neighborhood and you know what's acceptable and what's not acceptable.
Generally speaking, yeah. Yeah, it's usually okay.
The task for all of us is to make sure we basically run our village, our town, our city, our state, our country like that.
Sure.
And I think a lot of us have looked the other way because we have so many other jobs we're worried about. And I think we should look back again.
Can the Pope make a difference in women's issues?
Of course the Pope could make an enormous difference if he chose to.
Uh-huh.
You don't see a lot of women priests around, do you?
No, I mean, that's true.
Look at the rules the Vatican has.
Yes, yes.
I mean, does a woman have the right to her own body or not?
I know, right? I mean, these
are... You know what? I'll tell you one more story. I was in a church, a very, very big church in Toronto not long ago, and I had to give a speech. And there were probably 600 people in the congregation.
We've got about audience. 20 seconds.
And afterwards, during the Q&A, the minister said to me, what can the church do about this violence? I said, you stand up in your pulpit one Sunday and tell them they're sinning if they hit their wives. You'll do a lot about it.
Great. All right, folks. This is Sally Armstrong, the author of the latest book, Uprising. This is the Dr. Future Show on KSCO Santa Cruz. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being with us, Sally.
Yeah, thanks for your presence.
And thanks
to you.
Hey.
Bye.
Bye for now.